and the world. I'm John Batchelor. Overclassification, much in the news these last days, because of the conduct of a young airman and the release of documents on a website called Discord that is global and at the same time mostly in the hands of young people. Overclassification is said to be one of the triggers for this embarrassment for the administration and for all of the apparatus of the U.S. government. Henry Sokolsky is the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center, who released a report prior to the revelations of the mass release about overclassification systems. Since then, senators from both parties have come together to propose reform for the classification system. But that's a week past. So what is actually moving in Washington, and what is, at least right now, the conversation about solving this? Henry, a very good evening to you. It's a week. That's not much time for Washington. It's a whole lot of time for New York. So at this point, is it your measure that overclassification is now a pressing problem for both parties and that it can be addressed quickly? Good evening to you.
Good evening. I'm not sure anymore. Actually, a week is a lot of time, even in Washington. When you announce legislation, everyone applauds. And then probably two things happen that I've seen from the people I talk to who know about all this. One, they get excited and think, oh, well, it'll pass immediately. That is not going to happen, I suspect. And the reason why is the House has stood up its own task force to study the matter, which is code for, we're not going to take this legislation the Senate has proposed. We're going to create our own legislation. Now, whether or not bits and pieces of the legislation might be slipped into the National Defense Authorization Act, which is the one bill that must pass every year, remains to be seen. But I would not assume anything until we hear from the House, and we haven't heard from the House. So that's point one. And I think point two, there are people who, are more cynical and say, oh, well, since they've gestured toward it, the administration will just simply crack down on people in some fashion or another, saying that they've improved the vetting process or they've taken away some clearances, and then we're pretty much done, is what the cynics say. So I'm a little concerned that we need to perhaps demand the bureaucratic equivalent of a brick being thrown at the system while we're waiting for the legislation to do anything or be passed. And, you know, one modest proposal I've heard is, well, why don't we just get rid of some of the silliest of the or the most questionable, dubious classification levels. One of them is controlled, unclassified information. Another would be official use only. And my favorite, confidential, which almost no one uses. Now, you know, there are arguments perhaps for using these things for a short while. A senior official might have a route that you'd want to classify until after the trip. There are lots of personal files that could be classified under private personal information without using these things. But I think the system needs to know that the executive and the Congress are serious about doing something. And if we wait on legislation to be passed and implemented, maybe they won't get the message.
The question then is, can anything be done short of a complete rewriting of the laws? In your estimation right now, I take it no, that the complete rewriting...
I don't think I'm quite that cynical or negative. Yeah, there's plenty that can be done without law that some agencies have begun to do. It would be nice if Congress held hearings. The idea that you legislate without hearings, I don't know. I think that's not quite right. Hearings could help propel the executive to do some of the things they're doing right more often in other places in the government. So hearings might help, but I don't know if that is in the offing.
Another update, Henry, that we've talked about over the last year since the Ukraine invasion, which is Zaporizhia, the largest nuclear power plant in Europe. Over these last weeks, we've cited reports from Moscow, from Kyiv, that the engineers, the technicians at the Zaporizhia plant, what's left of it, one unit in particular has been kept in some fashion not inert, one unit, that there's been evacuation, that there have been explosives planted or military equipment at Zaporizhia. All of this is highly suggestive that it could be damaged if the order is given or if there is an inadvertent conduct during a conflict. And we now have information to suggest that the counteroffensive by the Ukrainians could include Crimea, which is adjacent to Zaporizhia province. So I put all of this together and puzzle, because you've worked on this for years. A nuclear power plant in a combat zone that's in a conflict between two powers, Russia and NATO, that leads to the worst case scenario. Do I overinterpret this, Henry?
I don't think so. I think if they, the Russians, need to, they probably would like to make Zaporizhia an enormous radiological speed bump for any offensive to take Crimea. It would make a very good strategic distraction if it appeared as though the plant was in danger of radiological release and explosives going off, the staff being entirely extracted, could probably produce a strategic pause in an offensive headed south by the Ukrainians. So it's not harebrained, and it surely is what is being suggested by all of these actions by Putin.
And your measure of the IAEA, because I lose track every once in a while of Rafael Grossi, the director of the nuclear watchdog, they've recommended a safety zone about Zaporizhia. That would seem to be mooted by this claim by Moscow that explosives have been planted.
Well, it's not mutually exclusive. To highlight the dangers, you might want to make those negotiations, if not come to an absolute close, pick them up again. Start talking publicly about the horrors of what would happen and why we want to demilitarize the area, to get everyone to understand, oh, well, you haven't done that yet, and oh my God, something horrible might happen.
Your measure of Zaporizhia right now, we just have incomplete reports. The largest nuclear power plant in Europe, is it finished, Henry? Can it be rebuilt or renovated in the best case scenario?
That is an excellent, excellent question. Nobody is talking about. On the one hand, it's a big block of power that the grid in Ukraine depends on. And symbolically and politically, to walk away from the reconstruction of it might be really difficult. On the other hand, there's probably a lot of money that would be required, I don't know how much, to make that plant whole again. They have pilfered and hollowed out an awful lot. Then there's the little matter of staffing it. And presumably, there's a way to do that. But, they're short 3,000 people now. They're all in Russia. That's a lot of people to come up with. So the question then is how if you Ukraine somehow reclaims it, what do they do with it? I think it wouldn't be too early now to start thinking about that. Maybe you don't start on every single one of the reactors. Maybe you only start, one or two, and that's it. I don't know. Maybe you reconfigure the grid not to be as dependent on such a large block of power in the first place. I don't know. I don't see any discussion. I don't see any government consideration of that, but it ought to begin now.
In your measure, we just have less than a minute. Has Washington taken for granted Zaporizhia will be secure even in the event of a counteroffensive, or is someone in Washington worried about the worst case scenario, a Chernobyl in a battlefield? 30 seconds.
I am not persuaded that they comprehend that, and they need to. They talk far much more about all of the small and large reactors that are going to rebuild or build in Ukraine, Poland, and Romania, but not very much about how they're going to protect these things against military assaults.
Henry Sikorski is the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Patrick.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.